Skype 929-299-1269.
Welcome to the SDF
Hello
conference
and
system.
Welcome.
One
this
other party is in this
SDF
conference.
Open VoIP. To join the conversation, please dial 929-299-1269. That's 929-299-1269.
There are two other parties in this conference.
This is Publius dialing in as is customary for me. After my live reading, which I started about a little after 23 UTC. Anyway, again, three chapters of All Men Are Brothers. The 1930s translation by Pearl S. Buck of the classic Chinese novel known as The Water Margin. And man, oh man, oh man, it's basically violence and cannibalism and, you know, Wu Sung doesn't just resort to violence, he has a timeshare there. man, oh man. Sung Jung has managed to get himself in peril again. So basically it's all, it's a very bloody story, to be perfectly honest. Anyhow, I'm hoping that some of you have been watching or listening. You know, you don't actually have to watch the video, I think. You know, you just listen to the background. But video, I am amused by the way that people seem to want to engage with videos in particular. But, you know, if you just want to listen to me reading, of course, you have opportunities to do that at 1500 Tuesday and Friday, although this past Friday I missed because I had to get up early and go to a funeral. Even still, I didn't actually make it on time. And then Tuesday, this coming Tuesday, I will also miss because I have a doctor appointment. We will see if I can put together a pre-recorded show for you. If not, you'll be at the mercy of whatever the auto device picks. I didn't have a pre-recorded show for Friday, in no small part because it was funeral Thursday evening, back to the house, funeral Friday morning, and I was just pretty much wiped out. But I talked about that on my other show, A Step Farther Out, which is 1900 Saturdays, that's half an hour. I said that, you know, I didn't want to get anywhere near a car again if I could avoid it. Problem is, I can't always avoid it. Matter of fact, I had to go out last night, much to my disgust, because I had a library book that I had to return. Had to return it to the university library. If it were the public library, I could have walked. It's a little bit of a stretch from here, but not terribly bad. But the university library is on the other side of the freeway. And, of course, we don't have a bus service worth spit. Particularly, that goes double on weekends. Anyway, I figured I would dial in and hang on until, you know, maybe the quarter hour, just in case anyone wants to call in and talk to me about the book or about anything else under the sun. Definitely irritated that this other record that I have, you know, I bought two records of steam locomotive sounds. And one of them is for the Flying Scotsman. And the other is from a narrow gauge line in Maine. I'm going to read you the blurb off of the back here, just because it's kind of interesting. Now, am I even coming through? I guess so. Edaville's Talking Whistles, Doubleheaders of 1961, and you can see it here. Here is a record that will start your senses throbbing with the pulse of steam engine sounds. If you like steam, you'll love this record, for it is entirely devoted to the steam locomotive. This is not a record with the emphasis on car wheels. Listen to the 20th century Casey Jones, F. Nelson Blount on number 8, flying right past the microphone. Hear the astounding echoes produced by whistles that will hold you spellbound. On side A band 2, you'll hear number 3 at Edaville with a very unusual flat stack effect while going between buildings and trees. While listening, you will hear every phase of steam railroading in startling hi-fi. Also, doubleheaders of 1961 make their surprising appearance. Then, for those who like the spine-tingling sounds of whistles with unbelievable echoes, the engineers give us a conversation with the talking whistles about a mile and a half away. We know you will thrill to every moment of sound this record has to offer. The Edaville Story. Back in the 30s, when steam was king, two avid railroad fans by the name of F. Nelson Blount and Fred Richardson were spending all of their spare time chasing steam locomotives wherever they might be found. Their travels took them to the many narrow-gauge railroads of Maine, many of which they visited, just in time to see the tracks ripped up and the little engines scrapped. They tried in vain to interest persons with the financial capacity in preserving the entire Sandy River line. Some years later, another fan by the name of Ellis D. Atwood bought a considerable portion of the rolling stock of the defunct Bridgeton and Harrison Railroad in Maine and had it transported to South Harbor, Massachusetts. Here he had it operated over the rails laid through his cranberry plantation. At first, the primary use of the engines was freight operations in running the bogs, but occasionally passenger trains were run for the pleasure of Mr. Atwood and his friends. Thousands of people hearing of this flocked to Eddyville. The name was derived from Mr. Atwood's initials. To ride the steam trains. Mr. Atwood died in 1950, and for several years the railroad was operated by trustees of his estate. After an extended spell of poor weather conditions, including hurricanes, they decided to sell the railroad properties and concentrate their efforts on the cranberry business. Thus, in November of 1955, F. Nelson Blount, a dynamic young man, became president and owner of the Eddyville Railroad. Mr. Blount has been increasingly enthusiastic in his efforts to preserve steam locomotives, which have virtually disappeared from the American scene. A fifth 2-foot gauge engine, number 5, from the Louisiana sugar plantations, was added to the stable of active iron horses. All Eddyville engines were completely overhauled, including new boilers with brass bands on the boiler jackets. The passenger cars, some of which were built at Laconia, New Hampshire, as far back as 1882, were restored to as near original condition as possible. Also, there is a 2-foot gauge main parlor car in its original condition, the only one like it in the world today. In short, Mr. Blount has spared no expense to create an atmosphere of authentic early 1900s steam railroading. The nostalgic appeal of such an atmosphere is becoming ever more popular as the years pass by. To be at Eddyville when the engines are running is like turning back the hands of time. If you like steam railroading, you'll enjoy this record and certainly like Eddyville, for the haunting sounds of the locomotive's whistles and the thrill of their exhaust is now rare in this country. Credits recorded and edited by Whistle Recording Incorporated. Jacket art by Louis Bonamarte. Chief engineers F. Nelson Blount and Fred Richardson, who, by the way, are authors of Along the Iron Trail, published in 1938. Any copying of this record for commercial use is strictly prohibited. And the bands are very carefully described. Side A, 1. While number 3 shifts cars and blows her condensate at Eddyville, you will hear gas buggies going about their chores. 2. Now she heads for the main line with a cut of cars. 3. We catch number 7 backing into Eddyville with a cut of cars clearing her condensate. 4. After taking on water, we hear number 7 slipping on the wet rails and can distinguish the engine's wheels gripping the track. Five, again we hear number 3 leaving Eddyville, slipping even more. 6, number 4 slips as she pushes a heavy cut of cars into Eddyville. 7, we hear number 3 heaving out of Cranberry Valley with her heavy load. 8, number 7 leaves Cranberry Junction for the Mount Uran grade. That's U-R-A-N-N. 9, number 4 goes through Eastman's Flume at a city pace. 10, we go north to find number 3 fighting Cranberry grade. 11, listen to the forgotten sound of the steam engine being fed its smack with a coal shovel as number 7 awaits departure. 12, for the first time, number 8 makes her appearance with whistle crying in the dark and fast iron. 13, coasting through Cranberry Valley is number 4. 14, number 7 chills us with her whistle at Eastman's Flume. 15, heading upgrade towards Eddyville, we find number 4 with her rhythmic stack. 16, the grade at Mount Uran gets charged by number 8. 17, once again, number 8 thrills us with her whistle as she leaves Atwood Bogs on the fly. Casey Blount is at the throttle. 18, number 3 is close behind and tells us she is coming. 19, blowing wildly for Eastman's Flume is number 7. 20, number 4 heads for Eastman's Flume. 21, with her shiny proud bell ringing, number 7 leads Eddyville. 22, we hear a mournful whistle as Casey wheels number 8 out of Eddyville. Unfortunately, somewhere around band number 20, the record skips. And it's in such lovely shape that I guess it's a pressing fault. And probably if another copy of this record could be found, it would have the same fault. I say if, advisedly. It's not on Discogs. I'll have to add it. Side B. Whistle post curve open is sharp, but Casey takes her in stride as he fills the night with the famous whistle from number 8. 2. Number 4 heads upgrade toward Eddyville in style, whistle blowing. 3. Roaring across Eastman's Flume is number 8. 4. Passing through Atwood Bogs is number 3. 5. Number 4 and number 8 now doublehead for a heavy load. The slight stack turns into a mighty roar, and number 4 breaks away from number 8 at a switch just out of Eddyville. 6. We hear number 4 and number 8 whistle for the grade up Mount Uran and slip as the hogger's hand gets a little heavy on the throttle. 7. The famous whistles, and number 4 and number 8 come tearing out of the Atwood Bogs. 8. Now number 7 and number 8 pump up their air in front of the engine house and back to Eddyville. 9. With heavy stack and chilling whistle, they pull out of Eddyville. 10. From down in Cranberry Valley, the nostalgic whistles of number 7 and number 8 echo up to us as they prepare to climb up Cranberry Grade. Number 7 pumps up her air on the way up. 11. Now number 8 pumps up her air, and with both engines' bells ringing loudly, they back down out of Cranberry Junction to get a run at the Mount Uran grade. 12. Both engines number 7 and number 8 top off their air and let us know that they are coming with whistles echoing in the night. When they get close, number 8 slips heavily, finally finds footing, and whistles for the top. 13. Here is unbelievable speed. Words alone cannot begin to tell the sight of two iron monsters with throttle pulled out all the way, sucking the fire out of the stacks into the night while flying through Eastman's Flume with whistles screaming wildly. 14. From a mile away on a cold night, we hear the talking whistles. The engines are entering Eddyville and set off a torpedo in the middle of their conversation to commemorate the end of another year of Eddyville's iron horses. In case you are wondering what they mean by torpedo, in the old days, this was a packet of gunpowder or some similar explosive, which was attached to one of the rails, which would explode when the locomotive went over it. And the purpose of this was to provide an additional signal to the engine man of danger up ahead, presuming that other attempts to signal him with red lanterns or what have you had failed. It was particularly considered useful in a fog, at night, on a line with sharp curves, which would reduce visibility, and so on. Anyway, I have to add this to Discogs because there is nothing, I checked and there was no listing even resembling it. But yes, the painting there is by Louis Bonmarte. I might scan it. Wish I could scan the whole jacket, but that's not practical. A big scanner would be nice to have. Anyway, but it's a nifty painting, and I think I get the painting on my scanner and scan that. You know, just in case I need another image of a steam locomotive. Jazzmaz says, hi. Well, okay, so I've stayed on here for until the quarter hour, and if I guess I'll ring off. But anyway, for those of you who have been watching my show, thank you very much. Jasmine says, American train show. Oops, wrong input focus. No, I think that was the right input focus. At least what I'm doing could be described as an American train show. I don't know if anyone's used the chat function on Tubnix. Anyway, J.R. Sharp says, keep going! But I was using FFmpeg to record from the album, Like I say, I got to about band 20 on side A and it started to skip. I should try side B and see what happens. You know, if people really want to hear what I have recorded, I could play it during open mic later. Anyway, but thank you to those of you who tuned in, and I hope, you know, thank you, of course, always to my supporters. I always appreciate that. And I will, I mean, next week is Easter. I mean, today was Palm Sunday. Next week is Easter Sunday. But I might, you know, depending, I might come in, like I say, probably a little late the way I did this time, you know, not at 2200, but maybe an hour later or so. And do a reading, if people want that, if I'm not doing anything else. I'll let you know, all right? Thank you, everybody, and good night.
Open VoIP 929-299-1269. Open VoIP 929-2.